Hey guys, welcome to the 330 Sports Show. Today is Tuesday, October 26th, 2021. We're live and we're downtown Youngstown from Youngstown Studios. I want to remind you guys to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at 330 Sports Show, and make sure you are following the Youngstown Studio Network on YouTube and Facebook to get all of our notifications, not just from my show, but from across our network. So we are going to get into a lot of stuff today. We're obviously Browns heavy. So Browns played last Thursday night, came up victorious against the Denver Broncos. That was a huge win going forward. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about the Buckeyes and their continued dominance over the last 5 weeks or so. We'll get into a little bit of World Series stuff. We'll check in with the Cleveland Cavaliers and some other stuff around the sports world. I also have kind of a fun Halloween-themed bracket that we're going to do in lieu of our Top 5 Tuesday this week. So it'll be kind of fun. It'll be a three-show bracket, so it's Halloween candy. I just put that out there yesterday for people to vote on. So we started in the Sweet 16, pun intended there, and then we're going to move on to the Elite Eight, Final Four, and then we'll announce the winners from there. So let's start with the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns last week, obviously the big stat of the game was the 17-14 victory over the Denver Broncos, dominating performance in the first half. You know, the score was only 10-0, but the Browns, I think, limited the Broncos to like two first downs. It was just an absolutely dominating performance. Case Keenum stepped in. D'Ernest Johnson obviously had a really, really big game. You know, we'll talk about that in a minute. I think Jed Wills also stepping in, playing, was huge because that flips Blake Hantz. He was playing the left tackle spot where he was able to play the right tackle spot, a spot where he's more comfortable. And then you can take that rookie lineman off the field that you could tell he was just, he's just not quite ready. He's not quite groomed yet for the NFL. He was a defensive lineman and then flipped, his name's James Hudson, and then flipped to offensive tackle. And he only played 1 year of offensive tackle in college football. So, you know, getting all those guys to step up in key positions were huge. Obviously, Case Keenum was a big one, and D'Ernest Johnson was kind of the headliner of the night with his numbers. So let's talk a little bit about those two. First of all, D'Ernest Johnson, you know, kind of the big news story of the night. We'll start with him. He's obviously the Browns' third string running back, but he had 22 carries for 146 yards, which is about 6.5 yards a carry. He had one touchdown, and he also had two catches for 22 yards. So a very, very impressive day out of D'Ernest Johnson. And he was the first person to credit the lineman. And you could just tell in his interview, he's just a very humble guy, which is awesome to see. And, you know, it's just refreshing to see guys that get their opportunity, step up, take advantage, and just love it. You know, he wasn't cocky, but you could just tell he loved that spotlight on him, and he got that opportunity and he took advantage. What'd you think, Joe, of the game on Thursday night, either him or Case or whoever?
Yeah, I was really surprised. And, you know, the guys were fresh. They had something to prove. I really think that they all did their part, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how many of the starters are now a little fearful that their starting roles are might be in jeopardy a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, sure. So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, D'Ernest Johnson is going to be on the field more. You know, Kareem Hunt's still going to be out for 3, 4, 5 weeks longer. So you're going to need someone to give Nick Chubb a break, especially him coming off an injury. So Nick Chubb, by all reports, has been back at practice. I believe he practiced yesterday in practice today. So he's going, you know, Nick Chubb's one of the best running backs in the NFL. He's going to be in your starting backfield. But like you said, D'Ernest Johnson's going to be able to take some carries away from him because you're able to see what he can do. He had that big game against the Cowboys last year, actually in a game Nick Chubb got hurt in, ran for almost 100 yards in that game. But this was his game, his spotlight. John Kelly had a few rushes. The fullback got in the end zone on a screen pass.
So I got a question for
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
So this is sort of going to be 3 games from now, sort of like preseason, where you have a bunch of guys flash and you're like, we're going to make some bad choices. Everybody gets healthy. And can you carry 4 running backs on your roster?
Right. I mean,
that seems like a lot, right?
Well, John Kelly's going to get bumped too. He'll be a practice squad guy because you have Felton, who can kind of play, you know, like a little scat back in the backfield, a little bit of a wide out. And injuries, there's always injuries that pop up that you don't, you know, foresee or don't hope to happen. Now, let's talk about Case Keenum real quick.
Yes.
Because he is a guy that I think a lot of people were like, well, this guy's making $6 million a year. He's literally not doing anything. And people don't realize how valuable a good backup quarterback is in the NFL. Now, you know, you play your cards right, you keep your quarterback protected, you know, hopefully you don't need that guy. That's like best case scenario. You don't need your backup quarterback, right? Like that's ideal situation. Everybody wants to be in that situation. Baker played the last 51 consecutive games, or at least started the last 51 consecutive games, which for the Cleveland Browns, that's unheard of. You know, we go through quarterbacks like it's nothing, like it's water through, you know, like it's this coffee I'm going to be drinking, you know, it's going to be gone very soon. But, you know, Case stepped up. He is, we talked about this on Thursday. He's very similar to Baker in a lot of ways. I think the biggest difference I saw was arm strength. He doesn't have that strength of arm that Baker does to, you know, maybe hit some of those downfield targets, to maybe cut through that wind a little bit. That was crazy. There was like 2 tornadoes or something in Northeast Ohio on Thursday night. Yeah. And, you know, like a couple hours before the Browns game, but that wind was a major, major factor. And I think there was a ball, especially to Beckham, and maybe one to Anthony Schwartz in that game where he just wasn't able to get enough on it. Now, it wasn't intercepted. It didn't cost them, but, you know, maybe Baker makes that throw. I don't know. But overall, I thought Case did a great job. He stepped in, you know, what we said was a must-win game. You know, nothing spectacular, but made all the little throws that he needed to. So I guess just thoughts on Keenum's performance.
So I think what he did a little better than Baker, I feel like sometimes Baker, while he's looking for his options, feels very indecisive. Mm-hmm. And I think Case, you know, it was one of those things where he was quick to make a decision, either throw it away or get it there, but it happened faster for him.
That's a good point. That's a good point because there was only one time where I felt like, oh shit, get rid of the ball. And actually he completed it and it was like within a half second, it would have either been a strip sack or, you know, or this completion that he got for a first down. So, you know, like you said, though, he made quick decisions. He didn't do anything spectacular, as I mentioned, but he made all the throws that counted. Yep. And moved the chains. And, you know, the Browns only scored 17 points in this game. They did kind of sit at the ball at the end. They could have scored, but you know, an overall nice performance by Case Keenum. He was 21 of 33, which is about 64%, threw for 1 touchdown. The play call, I want to get your opinion on this one. Now, the Browns had like a 4th and 3. They were going in, I think it was a 10-7 game at the time. So the Browns are up 10-7. They got the ball on Denver's like 5-yard line. It's 4th and 3. Kevin Stefanski chooses to go for it instead of kick the field goal. Now, I hated the call at the time. Hated it. I was like, just kick the field goal, get the points, right. Go up 6, make them score a touchdown, which later they ended up scoring a touchdown. But what's your thought? Now, they converted it, but that was that one where Keenum could not find anyone open, scrambled, and like he like made 3 guys miss. I think he dropped back like 10 yards too. So instead of those 3 yards, he actually had to run like 13 yards to get a first down. And just by the skin of his teeth, got the first down. What was your thoughts on that call?
Now, if they do it all the time, they do those calls, and it's fine because they're playing the numbers and it's going to work on the eventuality. But it doesn't make when they come up short on it feel any better. So they're going to get stung on some of those for sure.
Yeah, yeah. There's no way you're going to convert 100% of those, especially in the red zone when you're, you know, everyone's kind of bunched up, you know, the end zone kind of holds you up a little bit, so you can't stretch the field as much. But I just did not like the call. And just because a play works doesn't mean it's the right call. Or just because a play doesn't work doesn't mean it wasn't the right call, if that makes sense. So I guess it's just my opinion. But like you said, he has showed he's consistent going for it throughout the season. So it's kind of like when you're playing blackjack. If you're someone that always stays on 16, continue to do it. Or if you hit on 16, continue to do it. It's just that consistency. And I think people at the end of the day can live with it as long as you're showing more positives than negatives.
And so far, fans have tolerated it because there hasn't been a game that came down to the field goal that you didn't kick, you know, when doing that. Mm-hmm. But you get a couple of those under your belt, but you lost because you were playing it. Sure. And it's game over. Like you're not going to have the fan support anymore.
Exactly. And, you know, there's always like so many different formulas and algorithms and things like that that go into something like that. I'm not saying like if they don't convert, Denver goes down and scores their touchdown and it's 14-10 or 14-13, whatever it might be. But, you know, because if they get stopped, then the Broncos have to go 90 some yards instead of whatever, you know, they had to go for their next touchdown. And maybe the Browns defense is more pumped up or amped up or, you know, a whole lot of factors change in that formula. But
and it's how they, when they study your tape and they see that you do that stuff, they play you differently.
Sure,
too.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. And then going forward, that gives the Steelers something to think about, the Bengals, the Lions on down the list of teams the Browns are going to face. So, you know, I like your saying of, you know, go for it. And it just made me nervous with a backup quarterback, your third string running back, your third string and fourth string wide receivers out there at times. And, you know, but they got it done and, you know, you move on and now it's Steelers week. Let's talk about a few other things on the defensive side of the ball. So, these are the Browns. As I mentioned earlier, first of all, the Browns held Denver to two first downs in the first half. The defense by the numbers this season after seven games, they are second in total yards allowed per game. They are seventh in passing yards per game allowed. They are third in rushing yards per game, but they are 15th in points allowed. So they're really good at not giving up a whole lot of yards, but they're still giving up some points. Here's why. They are number 28th. Still in the league on third down percentage given up overall. So Denver scored one of their touchdowns on a third down conversion in the red zone, a little dump off to the running back, and he gets in. But overall, the Browns are really, really good defensively this year, except for that one pretty important stat of getting the team off the field on third down. And third and short, third and long, whatever it might be, they just need to shore up that end of the defense. But Myles Garrett continues to lead the team. I believe he still leads the league with 9.5 sacks. He is now second all-time in Browns history as well with, I don't have the total number, but he's second all-time in Browns history with sacks. Now, I want to talk about Jarvis Landry. Jarvis Landry, we know, is the absolute heartbeat of the Cleveland Browns. He is just, you know, he's so dependable. He's reliable. He is a leader on and off the field. He had 5 catches for 37 yards, which it doesn't really sound that eye-popping, that impressive. You know, no touchdowns, only 37 yards. But a lot of those first downs were one-handed grabs, or, you know, there was one he like juggled like 3 times but moved the chains for a first down, kept a drive alive, and he's showing his toughness. He had to leave the game at one point, then came back, but he is just a leader that they need on the field. A lot of times he tells guys, you know, to like get on the line or back off the line, you know, to keep the formation in order. So he is just a vitally important part of the Browns offense, sort of another quarterback on the field at the wide receiver position. Again, Odell had a shoulder strain as well. I believe it was some sort of joint in his shoulder. So he is not 100%. He's banged up a little bit. Donovan Peoples-Jones right before the game kind of frustrated me too, because I had to pick up, I had like six guys on buys this week on my, in my fantasy football lineup. And so I just picked up DPJ like last minute, and, you know, he was average. He was supposed to score like 7-8 points. And, you know, I heard Aaron Andrews right before the game, like, Donovan Peoples-Jones with a strained groin will be out. You know, I was like, you know, he can't win, man. Can't win. So, but hopefully he's back and healthy for the Steelers game coming up. And hopefully you get, you know, Odell back, Jarvis back, Peoples-Jones back, and your receivers are, you know, your top three are in order, and the rest of the guys fall in line there. So it is Pittsburgh Steeler week. I'm, you know, you'll probably see my sweatshirt I'm wearing. It's Ohio against the world. So we are playing, normally we hate up on the Michigan teams, but we're going to let the two Michigan schools beat up on each other this week, Michigan State and Michigan, just let them beat the hell out of each other. And we'll see where they come out at the end of the day.
I can be a fan of the Spartans way more than the Wolverines.
Oh, exactly. No doubt. No doubt. But this week, as a Buckeye graduate and fan, and as a huge Cleveland Browns fan, it's hate on Pennsylvania week. And I know we have some Pennsylvania people that watch the show and our neighbors not too far. You know, we're about what, 7-8 miles from the border, you know, and God bless all you Pennsylvania people that watch. And yins are great people, but you know, I'll be rooting against you this week. Browns are 3.5 point favorites as the lines opened up Monday versus Steelers. This game is on Halloween, which makes it, gives it a little extra just vibe to it. Now, the only thing I don't like so far about this game, I just heard this coming down here. Jim Nance and Tony Romo are doing this game, which is cool. I like both of those guys a lot, but I just heard this stat. This is crazy. The Browns are 0-7. When Jim Nance and Tony Romo do their game. So,
oh, don't say that.
Well, hopefully I jinxed it in the other way.
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, it eventually that streak's got to end, you know, it's got to end at some point. And if you're a good team in the AFC, Jim Nance and Tony Romo are going to do a bunch of your games. So might as well end the streak this week. So
speaking of commentators, yes. We talked about who we hate and who we like. When you watch games, mm-hmm. Are you a radio person? Who do you prefer to call the games?
With college, it's definitely Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt. They do a lot of the Buckeye games on Fox. This week, it's going to be Herb Street and Chris Fowler. I do like those two. And then Nance and Romo. I like Jim Nance. Tony Romo sometimes is a little too nice way to word this. Sometimes he's a little too cute in his phrasing, okay. and it kind of like rubs me the wrong way. Like he has this love affair with, like, it feels like the other team's quarterback. He's not openly rooting for them, but it feels that way. So sometimes Romo rubs me the wrong way. I'll say that.
Okay.
How about you? Who do you like?
Well, when I'm watching Browns games, I will listen to Donovan and I will mute the TV because I just can't take the national commentators.
Can you get it synced up?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Like sometimes what will happen is that I do YouTube TV and so I can basically put it as forward, but sometimes the radio is ahead of the TV and I can't get them to line up because I can't get the radio to pause. Right. Mm-hmm, but if it's the opposite, then I could pause the TV and get it to line.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah. I have YouTube TV as well. And, I'm going to just put Armstrong on notice one more time because Armstrong, like, I feel like at every critical moment, three or four times, maybe even this season, the internet, you know, and it does the spinning thing when it's like, and I pay a lot of money for internet. I have the second highest you can get. It's like almost $100 a month just for the internet. And I'm like, what am I paying for? Like, this is more than the YouTube TV I'm paying for. So, you know, I don't want to sound cheap or anything, but it's like, just do your job. Come on. But back to the announcers real quick. Like, I love listening to the home team radio guys, you know, when it's the Indians or Guardians now, Tom Hamilton's the best. Doug Deacon and J- Jim Donovan, yep, are amazing. The only, you know, I was able to listen. I listened to the Browns Texans game on the radio, like the whole entire game, because I wasn't able to see that game live. But Paul Keels is another guy. He does Ohio State football and basketball. He's amazing. And he's just got this silky smooth voice. It just does an amazing job. But if I get the opportunity to listen on the radio, those guys make a difference because they paint such a good picture. And, you know, they're listening as a fan too, you know, so they can kind of be excited when it's your team that's scoring or doing whatever, something positive, as opposed to the national guys who, you know, again, they're all journalists. They're all broadcasters. They're not rooting against your team, but again, it feels like it a lot of times, or they just have like some narrative a lot of times that the network wants them to portray, or they love, it feels like they, you know, love a storyline, or they love a headline, or they love a certain player. Tom Brady's one of them. You know what I mean? So it's just, sometimes on the national networks, they'll kind of, irk you a little bit. So
now and this is going down conspiracy boulevard here. Yeah. Do you think that the league does, when you have a fan favorite like a Tom Brady, do you think mm-hmm. that they do cater to those personalities?
Oh, of course. Oh yeah. Because those are the guys that put the league. Okay. Listen to this.
Okay.
This is mind blowing. And I'm sure it's changed, but this, as of last weekend, the top 33 television shows since NFL football has started have all been NFL games. Really? The top 33 shows across, and what is that? CBS, Fox,
ABC and NBC.
NBC and ESPN.
Okay.
So ABC is owned by ESPN. It's all the same. Disney, Mickey Mouse owns everything, you know? That to me, when I heard that, I'm like, that makes sense. But when you hear that, it's just amazing. And what do we get? Aqib Talib in the NFL booth. He is hilarious. He is unscripted. It's pretty good.
Didn't they one year bring in a comedian to try to do commentary?
Dennis Miller.
Yeah,
Dennis,
that's right.
It was Dennis Miller.
That's right.
On Monday Night Football, and he did not last very long.
No, not at all.
Dennis Miller had a funny show on HBO. He was pretty good on SNL, but he was not good on Monday Night Football. And you know, you give him credit; they're trying something different. But he wasn't very good. No. He wasn't very good. Wasn't the right genre for him. But I like what they're doing with Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, how they kind of go back and forth. Last night, they had Tom Brady on. I didn't see it, but I watched some highlights of it. But they had Tom Brady on. They also had Marshawn Lynch on. Marshawn Lynch is a former running back for the Seattle Seahawks. And he must have forgot he was on live TV because he just dropped, you know, he swore a few times, and it was good entertainment. So
I don't appreciate those conversations while the game's going on, though. They do a lot of interrupting to what I want to be watching, which is on the field.
But I think that's for like someone who likes football a little bit, but not necessarily needs to see every play. They're just watching it kind of for the entertainment value. But maybe they know Peyton Manning more as like the guy that's been on SNL, or maybe the does the funny commercials or something like that. So it could be for a wider audience. Let me just put it that way. So
sell out.
Well, last year they did on Nickelodeon. They did like a different broadcast. It was the Bears and the Saints, and they did it for like a kid's version of it. And I just thought that was cool. It was like, you know, they like when they scored touchdowns, they have like, you know, the end zones, like they had the 3D graphics over top, like being slime and stuff like that. But they would talk to, they would talk in NFL terms like they were in kids' terms, which I thought was pretty cool. So
indoctrination of the next era of
exactly,
football fans.
Exactly. Right? I mean, you got to build your brand and bring them in. So, so we will have plenty, as again, I mentioned, I'm wearing this because it's Hate on Pennsylvania week. Ohio State plays Penn State this weekend, and the Browns and the Steelers match up on Sunday. So let's take a quick look around the NFL, just some of the scores. The Patriots, that score looks crazy, but the Jets are really, really bad. Zach Wilson left that game early with an injury. The Dolphins can't catch a break. The Falcons kick a last-second field goal to win. The Panthers started 3-0. They've really gone downhill. The game that caught everyone's eye, though, the Cincinnati Bengals, the number one ranked team in the AFC right now, Cincinnati Bengals, whooped on the Baltimore Ravens 41-17. What'd you think when you saw that score?
They're a real deal. They struggled early on, mm-hmm. but they got their stuff together. Burrow's healthy. I mean, yeah. it's a different deal.
They look really good. They look the part, and they've sort of taken over that Kansas City Chiefs role of dominating offense.
Yes.
Because the Chiefs, on the other hand, have really fallen off the last couple of weeks. They're now 3-4. And now they have to worry about even making the playoffs, where people thought, hey, you know, back-to-back Super Bowl appearances. But the Tennessee Titans have really come back. They're 5-2. The Las Vegas Raiders are 5-2. We'll get into some of the AFC standings here in a second, but just unbelievable. Some of these scores. Green Bay looks good. The Rams are a good team. They played pretty well, but Detroit, you know, hung tough in that game. The Cardinals remain undefeated. And Tampa Bay, I want to talk real quick about Tampa Bay in a second. And Indianapolis looks like another team. But look at these AFC standings. Cincinnati 1, Vegas 2, Tennessee 3. Now, the reason the Bills are 4 and not 3 is just based on Tennessee having a better record. And the reason the Ravens are 5 is the top team in each division gets one of the first 4 seeds. And again, we're through 7 weeks. This is all going to change, but gives you kind of a picture of what the AFC looks like. Yeah. Chargers 4-2. They had a bye this past week, and the Browns 4-3 would be the last seed in the playoffs right now, as they were last year. But knocking on the door, Pittsburgh Steelers 3-3. The Colts, Chiefs, Patriots, and Broncos are all 3-4. So you look at that, 7 teams that are in right now, you know, it's pretty solid teams. And then you add the Steelers would be 8, the Colts would be 9, Chiefs 10, Patriots 11, Broncos 12. So you have 12 teams in the AFC with 3 or more wins. That's very impressive. And the AFC is going to be a dogfight to get in there. I think it's going to take 10 wins to get in the playoffs. I think the Browns are capable of getting to that 10 win mark, no problem. Especially if their main guys can stay healthy. I think even if Case Keenum was the quarterback the rest of the season, I think the Browns have enough to get in the playoffs and you know, possibly win a game or two. Now, can they win a Super Bowl with Case Keenum? Probably not. You know, people would say that about Baker Mayfield too, that are Baker haters. But I tend to think the Browns can win a Super Bowl with Baker Mayfield, but we'll see. His health is very, very questionable right now. If I had to bet on it, I don't think he's going to play on Sunday. I'm sure he wants to, but will the doctors let him? I don't know. So, you know, big questions, and we'll know more on Thursday. So we'll talk more about it on Thursday.
So do you give up the mid part of your season with having, what's his name, play to get, let him heal up? Or if he's done for the season, is it throwaway at this point?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Browns roster is so good that I don't think you can ever throw it away fully, but, if Baker is going to miss, what, the Browns have 10 games left, 10 weeks left, or 11 weeks left, 10 games left. If Baker is not able to play, it really puts a damper on long-term goals. You know, I'm in no way eliminating the Browns from making the playoffs. I really think they can do that. But winning the division, I don't know. You know, then you'd have to probably say the Ravens or Bengals are favored in that situation. And the Steelers are not a bad team. They're not a great team, but it's up in the air. It really is. So hopefully Baker can either get back this week or in the next couple weeks and really, really help the Browns' chances to get where they want to go.
Well, I meant throwaway was probably a wrong term, but what I meant is that if you knew that there was going to be a lot of healing on this one, that you pull the plug and make sure that you know that this he's going into rehab like right now.
So he's healthy for next
exactly.
year. Exactly. So yeah, I understand that thinking. Everything I've heard is this injury could be, you know, up to a 6-month injury, which
get it started yeah, right
a,
now.
That's
then,
a long
honestly.
Time.
But here would be smart though. So your big thing is, okay, so anybody can come out and like in preseason have one good game.
Sure.
But if we can see that, what's the backup quarterback?
Case Keenum.
Yeah. Let's just say he puts 2 or 3 really consistent games. Now, me as the coach, I'm like, okay, well, Case can ride out the rest of this year.
Sure.
Maybe get us to the playoffs. And then you can say, you know, put Baker into rehab mode and get him healing. But if not, maybe you do have a choice of getting close to the playoffs and then pulling Keenum back in there and Baker gets at the end of the season.
Yeah. I think if you pull Baker now, he's got to do the surgery. Unless you know the doctors are saying, hey, give him 2 more weeks and rest up, you know, then I'm okay with it. But if he's, you know, any given play, anyone could get hurt and be out the rest of the season.
Right.
So if he's going to play, just play him. If he's not going to play, don't play him. So I think you just have to make a decision. It's a hard line, and maybe the Browns are trying to buy some time and see if he can get any healthier, but I don't think that's an injury that heals on its own.
Right.
So
he's going to have
to
baby at the rest
of the season. But apparently there's a bone in the shoulder now that's broken, and that's affecting, you know, his rest and stuff like that. So I don't know what the answer is. So I'm going to just say Browns doctors and independent doctors, that's why you're getting paid all that
good
money
luck
for.
To you.
So yeah. Real quick NFL note before we switch gears here. Did you see, Tom Brady, I think he threw 4 touchdowns on Sunday. They just destroyed the Bears. But Tom Brady throws now first player in NFL history to throw for over 600 touchdowns. I think it's like 602 or something like that. So Mike Evans, wide receiver for Tampa Bay, catches the touchdown pass. And, you know, when guys catch the touchdown pass, sometimes they'll fire it, you know, into the crowd or whatever. But Mike Evans, you know, you got Gronkowski down there. You got Tom Brady down there. You got some other popular players down there. You know, looks in the crowd and he's probably seen a bunch of number 12 jerseys, you know, Brady jerseys or 87 Gronkowski jerseys. So he finally finds a number 13 jersey, a Mike Evans jersey, walks up, hands it to the fan. That was the record setting touchdown. You know, that ball will probably end up in either Tom Brady's possession or in Canton, Ohio at the Hall of Fame. So Mike Evans hands him that ball. That ball, from what I heard, Tom Brady's first touchdown pass, which was like 20 years ago, to Terry Glenn, went for like $470,000.
There's a kid's college tuition right that, there, baby.
Yeah. and that's a Stanford tuition or an Ivy League tuition. That's not your Ohio State or YSU tuition. But that just think about, you know, first of all, that. And what would that ball be worth, you know, even in 10 years from now or even right now? If you put that on the open market, what would that be worth? Who knows? Yep. So the Buccaneers people, you know, approached him. I don't know if it was Tom Brady's people or the Buccaneers people and like, hey, you know, Tom might want that ball back. So the guy gives the ball back. Great, great guy to do that. You know, the Buccaneers are negotiating with him like, yeah, we'll get you a signed jersey. We'll get you a different game ball that's signed, whatever, this and that. And so he does. He agrees to it, gives the ball back. Last night on the Peyton Manning thing, Tom Brady was on and he's like, the dude lost all leverage when he gave the ball away, which is so matter of fact and funny. But Tom Brady was like, you know, the guy is taken care of, but he's not going to get what
the ball would have gotten.
The ball would have gotten.
Yeah.
But you would like this too, because you're a cryptocurrency guy. Tom Brady even said last night, I'm going to give him a Bitcoin too on top of that.
Nice.
So,
right.
And what are Bitcoins going for?
$63,000.
Okay. So $63,000, if I'm that guy, just, you know, and everybody's financial situation is different. Maybe that guy doesn't need the money. Maybe he does. So if he needs the money, hey, That's 60 grand right now. You can go cash in. If
he
you don't need it, let it ride or sell it or do whatever. So I just thought that was kind of a cool story, but you know, you also lucked into that ball and you got to talk to and meet Tom Brady and all this other stuff. So let me ask you this. If that were you, what would you hold out for?
That's a good question. You know, I'd probably like the traditionalism of it. I touched the ball that ended up being in there. So I wouldn't want to deprive other people of seeing it. So I probably would have done the same, hoping that they would have maybe, you know, given me some kind of like backstage pass or something like that.
I think I would have to ask you, especially if let's just say hypothetically, you're a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. You're at the game, right? So I would probably want season tickets for at least a full year. I don't think that's asking much because that's not actually costing them anything. Right. That's just dang, you know, or give me a suite or let me sit in Tom Brady's suite and maybe the seat next to Giselle.
Right.
You know, that's not a bad idea. Maybe you can work out some cool stuff like maybe Tom Brady's good at golf. Maybe you're a golfer. Like, hey, how about I get to golf 18 with Tom Brady too? Or, you know, something like that. I think that something like that would be neat. You know, you don't want to sound too greedy. The financial aspect's obviously a nice part, but you know, I think sometimes the experience is worth more than the cash. So, but yeah, I'd be like, you know, I'm going to at least need a signed, I'm not a big autograph guy, but I would at least want a signed ball or signed jersey with him. So I don't know. I think that would be kind of cool.
A hot tub party with Giselle. I'll take it.
that would be another good one too. So, all right, let's switch gears now. Let's talk about the Ohio State Buckeyes. They move to 6-1 with a dominant performance, 54-7. Joe, do you remember what that over under was?
What was it?
60.5.
Was it that. Really?
Yeah, 60.5.
These people are so good.
I mean, 61 is your total. Just amazing. The Buckeyes cover the spread. The spread was only 21. Ohio State scored 30 points in the second quarter. They were just dominant. They were up 44-7 at half. This was a 7-7 game, actually, after Indiana's first drive. Ohio State just completely dominant in this game, and really since week two. So let's talk about the Ohio State offense. They're basically have been unstoppable. On Saturday, they were 7-7 in the red zone. They at one point scored 19 of 20 touchdowns in a row, which is like, I mean, when you hear something like that doesn't even sound right.
Right.
But CJ Stroud on Saturday, 21 of 28, 266 yards, 4 touchdowns, which in the last 4 games, I think he has 14 touchdowns, no picks. So he is, we'll talk about the Heisman contenders here in a minute, but Ohio State threw for 352 yards, ran for 187. Again, they had 30 points in the second quarter alone and 44 at halftime in a dominant victory. Now we'll talk about the running game. Travion Henderson is just the best back in the country, in my opinion. You can talk about Bijan Robinson of Texas. You can talk about a few other guys around the country, but he is just an unbelievable back. He wears number 32 for Ohio State. He is a true freshman. He has 686 yards rushing this season, 168 receiving yards. He has 14 total touchdowns. And listen to this. He's only touched the ball 15 times or more in 2 games. So of all the, so 5 games this year, he's had 15 or less touches of the ball, and he's still doing what he's doing. He's just an unbelievable athlete, a dominant back. Especially people that watch this show, Maurice Claret, right here from Youngstown, Ohio, played at Warren Harding, went on to Ohio State, won the national title in 2002. With the Buckeyes, probably the most dominating freshman running back in recent history, at least for Ohio State. He had 18 touchdowns in 2002, you know, into the 2003 season. That is the freshman record at Ohio State. Travion Henderson right now has 14. They still have five regular season games to go, plus a Big Ten title opportunity, plus a bowl game or playoff appearance. So he should, as long as he stays healthy, knock on wood, shatter that record. So Travion Henderson, if you don't know the name, you're not watching enough Buckeye football, but he will be a name throughout the country the rest of this year to keep an eye on. So Chris Olave did not have a big game. He only had two catches for 14 yards. However, he had another touchdown in one of those games. He just continues to move up the Ohio State leaderboard. Right now, he has 30 touchdowns in his career. Again, five regular season games still left to go. Possible Big Ten champions, possible playoff performances, stuff like that. But David Boston, 34 touchdowns, Chris Olave with 30. Devin Smith, he just tied for second with 30. Chris Carter with 27. Santonio Holmes with 25. Those are names. Those are some that's some pretty good company to be up there with. David Boston was a first round pick. Devin Smith didn't have a great NFL career, but was a second round pick. Chris Carter, probably one of the best receivers in the history of football. You could argue probably top five receiver in the history of football all time. Santonio Holmes was Super Bowl MVP and a former first round pick. So just awesome, awesome numbers right there.
Do you see Scott's?
Scott says half of Henderson's yards came against Tulsa and Rutgers. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Joe.
But Tulsa.
Joe is a big Tulsa supporter. Huge loves Tulsa the, you know, loves huge. The green wave. Loves the green wave. So, but that is, you know, that's a point. I get it. But he also played a little. He only played the first half against Rutgers. Maybe even only the first quarter against Rutgers. And he did set the all-time freshman rushing record against Tulsa with like 277, I believe it was. So I'll take it. So I'll take it. What they still got to stop you. So whoever's out there playing against, just dominate them. So so as I mentioned earlier, Buckeyes that are in the top nine of the Heisman Trophy odds in Vegas. The favorite right now is a quarterback from Alabama, Bryce Young. He is sitting at about $1.50. So 150, you bet 100 to win 150. CJ Stroud right now is in second. And then you got Travion Henderson down the list. Plus 4,000. That's some pretty good. You bet $100 to win 4,000. Maybe he carries you to that Heisman Trophy. But Matt Corral from Mississippi has a good shot. Kenny Pickett of the University of Pittsburgh, or Pittsburgh University, or Pitt, or whatever you want to call him, is rising up that leaderboard, especially with that big win over Clemson this past weekend. So let's talk a little bit about the Buckeyes defense. So they have been much, much, much better. Again, you know, people are going to talk about who the Buckeyes have played. You know, they have not played a great schedule early on, but you still have to stop those teams in front of you, whether it's, you know, Michigan later in the season, or whether it's Rutgers, or whether it's Tulsa, whoever it might be. But you know, they did have Oregon on that schedule. They didn't play a great game against Oregon, but you know, it is what it is. But the Buckeyes were once, you know, in total defense in the hundreds. They are now down to the 48th best defense in the country. Again, can you win a national championship with a mediocre defense? I think with as elite as Ohio State's offense is, yes. Georgia is another team. I think Ohio State and Georgia both do two things very well. Georgia is the best defense in the country. I think it's very clear Ohio State's the best offense in the country. Now, Ohio State has some limitations on the defensive side of the ball. Georgia has some limitations on the offensive side of the ball. And then you got teams that are kind of middling, that are both good, not great at both things. Alabama, you know, we'll go on through the list. Oklahoma, there's a bunch of teams right up there. Cincinnati. But, you know, Ohio State is elite on offense. Georgia is elite on defense. That would be a really, really fun matchup if we get to that point. Now, Ohio State's dug itself a little bit of a hole. They have to win out. They have no opportunity if they lose another game, which, You know, they shouldn't, because you can't lose two games and get in the playoff. But they are they're getting themselves primed and back into an opportunity to get into a college football playoff.
So. I want to tell you, like, I mean, in an NFL reference, but when Kurt Warner and Isaac Bruce and Marshall Faulk, that was an offense that was explosive, elite. Mm-hmm. And those are the funnest games to watch when there's just like 40, 50 points a game on the scoreboard.
Oh, and Ohio State has scored 50 or more points in four straight games, which I saw some crazy stat that's like tied for second longest in Big Ten history. And it hasn't happened since, you know, for nearly like 100 years. I don't know the exact number of years or whatever, but just some crazy stat where it's already the second longest in conference history. And they've been playing football since like, you know, the 1880s. So
it'll be fun to watch.
Insane. Yeah. And this offense is something special. So Ohio State versus Penn State this weekend. James Franklin, I saw, you know, he's going to be distracted, I think, by this USC talk. I saw in a press conference earlier today where James Franklin says, my focus is 100% on the University of Illinois. They play Ohio State this weekend. So he's a little distracted. But Penn State is coming off. Did you see that Penn State game by chance? Mm-hmm. Okay. Insane. Insanity. Penn State, who's now 5-2, they were ranked 7th in the country. They lost to Illinois. They lost 20-18 in 9 overtimes.
Holy.
9 overtimes. Damn. So, by the way, you play 9 overtimes, you would think the over would hit. They were still under. Because I think on 7 different of those overtimes, they didn't score. Neither team. So, here's the difference with overtime this year compared to last year and previous years in college football. Once it gets to a third overtime, it used to be if you score a touchdown, you have to go for 2. Now, if it gets to a third overtime, it basically goes to a 1-down, 2-point conversion. It's almost like a shootout in hockey or a shootout in soccer. But it's like a regular 2-point conversion. You're set up at the 3-yard line. If you convert, the other team has to convert. You know, if you convert and they don't, they win. So it went back and forth, third overtime, fourth overtime, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. And then finally in the 9th, Penn State or Illinois scored. Penn State did not. They win the game and just craziness. So
is longest, that a record?
Yeah, longest game. I think there were 6 other games previous to this that had gone into 7 overtimes, but that was in the old format. But this was the first game in the history that went to an 8th overtime, let alone a 9th overtime. So just in insanity. And I don't know if that record's going to be broken anytime soon, especially both those teams. I said there used to be an episode of South Park where the kids wanted their summer, and they were like playing in these little league tournaments and kept winning. And, you know, so it meant that, you know, they kept having to play baseball, which they loved for a while, but then they're like, we want summer. So both teams ended up trying to lose and they knew what they were doing. And both teams couldn't figure out how to, you know, lose to the other one. It kind of felt like that a little bit on Saturday. A couple other active streaks for the Buckeyes. They have 22 consecutive Big Ten wins. They have 12 straight true road wins. They have 10 double-digit wins versus Big Ten opponents. And they have 27 consecutive victories versus the University of Indiana. So pretty impressive streaks right there. If we look at the top 25, the conferences that are in, the SEC has 6 teams in the top 25. The Big Ten also has... what do they have? They have 5 teams in the top 25. The Big 12 has 4. Conference USA has, what is that? Conference USA just has 1. The AAC has 2 with Cincinnati and SMU. 2 independent teams, Notre Dame and BYU. The ACC only has 2. The Pac-12 only has 1 in Oregon. Mountain West has 1. Conference USA, I mentioned, has 1. And then the Sun Belt has 1 team as well in the top 25. Real quick look at some of the big games from over the weekend. We had, again, five teams in the top 25 lose. Cincinnati struggled, but won. Oklahoma. The Oklahoma game was insane. They were down 10-0 to Kansas. Kansas might be the worst Power 5 team in the country. They're Oklahoma, the number three team in the country, down 10-0 at the half, 28-24 in the fourth quarter, and then had to, their quarterback, Caleb Williams, who's now their backup, who's now their starter, had to steal the ball away in a play I've never seen before from a running back. So the running back's running, gets stuffed behind the line by the Kansas defense. Caleb Williams, the quarterback, just kind of like sneaks, steals the ball from his own running back, gets the first down. Otherwise, Oklahoma might not win that game. So Oklahoma, I'm going to say, loses at least one game before the season is out. They're going to lose to Iowa State or Oklahoma State before the season's out. They are the worst number three team in the country I've ever seen. I mean, I'm not saying they're bad, but they're a team that probably could have three or four losses this season already. So, you know, some teams on bye this week. Georgia was on bye. Michigan State, Iowa, Kentucky, Auburn, and Baylor were all on byes this week. But crazy around the top 25. Oklahoma State lost on the road to Iowa State. That was a big loss. Coastal Carolina lost earlier in the week. NC State lost to the University of Miami. Purdue just got destroyed by Wisconsin after just getting ranked in the top 25. And then a crazy game, Wake Forest beat Army 70-56. 70-56. So just a crazy, crazy weekend.
Those are basketball scores.
I know, exactly. Sometimes basketball teams don't even score that much. So pretty awesome week again in college football. We're going to have another good week coming up this weekend. We'll talk about that on Thursday. Skip that one. Let's switch to baseball real quick. The World Series starts tonight. You got game one tonight. The Atlanta Braves and the Houston Astros. The Astros are a slight favorite, I believe, coming into this series. I'm picking the Braves. Well, I'm hoping and picking the Braves to win in seven games. I just like what the Braves are doing. I think they knocked off the best team in baseball in the Los Angeles Dodgers in their last series. So do they have enough juice to get them over the hump? The Astros, we all know, are glorified cheaters and should not even be in the World Series.
They should be banned for a decade. Right?
I agree. I don't know. The fact that the Astros were never punished for what they did 2, 3, 4 years ago. They did it over 2 years, I believe. And it's just a tragedy of the game of baseball. It really is. But I don't know. I am rooting for the Braves. I do have two soft spots for people on the Astros. I do. And if you're an Indians fan like I am, the Indians have greatly missed Michael Brantley. He was such a great player, such a good dude for the Indians. They have missed him ever since he left. He is an outfielder for the Houston Astros. So I do root for Michael Brantley, but I'll root for the Braves. And the manager of the Astros is a very likable guy, Dusty Baker. He's coached, I don't know, I can't even count how many teams he's coached, but he's a good dude. But I'll be rooting against their teams this coming
weekend.
Any
World Series that does not have a New York team, I'm happy.
That's a good point too. That's a good point. Or even Boston.
Boston, yeah, right.
You know, like especially in the American League, but I don't know. Like I normally don't root for National League teams, and I normally don't root for the Atlanta Braves, but I will be rooting for them. So you got game one tonight at 8:00 and game two on Wednesday night. So we'll be able to talk a little bit about it on Thursday's show. The Cavs. I want to talk about the Cavs real quick. Just check in with them. The Cavs have been awesome the last two games. They lost their first two games. They struggled, kind of figuring themselves out. But last night, they went in and beat a really good Denver Nuggets team on the road. They're starting a West Coast swing. And two nights before that, on Saturday night, they beat a really good Atlanta Hawks team. So the Cavs have two very quality victories under their belt already. Darius Garland looks good. Colin Sexton looks pretty good. Lauri Markkanen, they just picked up. He is a nice player. And then Jared Allen is a phenomenal, phenomenal piece for the Cavs. He is a true center, runs the floor, does all the dirty work. He's kind of a guy that's like just a dog out there. And then,
is he going to do it? Is he going to give Kevin Love any kind of credit?
I'll get to Kevin Love. Not yet, though. Kevin Love's coming off the bench this year, which is, I think, a nice role for him, and could add trade value for a team to pick him up, because like last night he scored, like, he was the Cavs' leading scorer last night.
Dang,
I think he had 22 points in 21 minutes, but let's just boost his value so we can trade him. I think Kevin Love, if he's mentally in the game and he can do what he does, which is, you know, score 15 to 20 and get you 8 to 10 rebounds and be a good leader in the locker room, I think that's exactly what they need. But the guy I want to talk about real quick is Evan Mobley. He is an absolute stud. I think the Cavs struck gold by getting this guy with the number 3 pick. Again, it's only 4 games into his NBA career. He's only 20 years old. Dang. But this guy is 7'1". He runs the floor. He can handle the ball like a guard. He can shoot the ball from outside. He's got touch inside. He's a good passer. He's a very good rebounder. He's a shot blocker. He is like the total package for exactly what the Cavs need. And he's a stud. He's an absolute stud. Now, Kevin Love.
Yes.
Kevin Love. Again, I kind of already touched on it, but I think Kevin Love.
For everybody listening, Justin already traded him mentally, right? The ship has set sail. This was 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
so this is a lot for Justin to come clean right now.
Let me tell you, I think I traded him last year when they were playing at the Toronto Raptors, and he just like rolled the ball inbounds instead of passing it to his teammate because he was frustrated. So it basically cost the Cavs another 2 points, but it also looked like a real shitty thing to do.
Right.
So, and that's not something you do when you got a bunch of 19, 20, 21 year old guys on your team.
Be your leader, be that mentor.
Exactly. And you're making $30 million a year. You know, I know no one likes to lose, but you know, you got to suck it up and be that guy on the court. You got to be the positive. If you're going to pout and be pissy, do it when you go home. So, one other guy I want to talk about real quick is Ricky Rubio. I said Marco Rubio the other night on accident, but different Ricky dude. Rubio has been a phenomenal piece for the Cavs. Again, coming off the bench, leading that second unit, but he plays very, very important minutes down the stretch and just in crunch time for the Cavs. He got into it a little bit with another player. And Joe, I'm going to hand out one of my first awards on the show.
Okay, cool.
My first award. You may like this, you may not.
Okay.
I think it's awesome, but I want to give out my first award, and forgive me if I mispronounce this guy too. It looks like, doesn't it look like FU? Like Facundo Campazzo. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but I was watching the game and I kind of wasn't listening to the pronunciations, but he gets the Cheese Dick of the Week award. So here's why. Last night, he's closing out on Ricky Rubio, and they had got into it a little bit, and he stuck his knee out and stuck his foot out to either have Rubio kind of come down. We all know those like little dirty moves, especially guys at the Y can get away with it and stuff. You know how to manipulate your body and kind of get away with it. But this guy did it last night in an NBA game. Could have really hurt Rubio, and for that, he gets the Cheese Dick of the Week award. So,
and his name is Facundo. Facundo.
It looks like Facundo Campazzo. Sorry, might have to put the explicit tag on this podcast. But just wanted to congratulate him on all his success of being our first Cheese Dick of the Week award. So that's one of my favorite words to say.
All right.
So, okay. Now let's switch from sports to our Sweet 16. See what I did there? Sweet 16 with the candy bracket.
Nice.
So I'm going to just put this up here, but I already put the results, or I'm going to show you the results of the first round. We had over 80 people vote on this, which was pretty good. I only had it up for a couple hours. So we had over 80 votes on this. And here are the winners of our first round. If I get it to load. Maybe it's going to load. Maybe it's not. But we had Three Musketeers defeating York Peppermint Patty. We had Almond Joy defeating Mounds. We had Reese's Cups defeating Twix. We had, let me see. I got to reload. Sorry. Sorry about that. Let's see. We had M&M's defeat Skittles. We had Snickers defeat Milky Way. We had Starburst over Twizzlers. To me, that was an upset. Starburst over Twizzlers. We had, let me see, 100 grand defeat Payday. Or, I'm sorry, defeat Baby Ruth. And we had Butterfinger defeat Payday. So we are in the Elite Eight. I'm going to put a link out there on our 330 page. So voting will start tonight, and that will announce the final four for Thursday's show. But we will have some good matchups there in the
Elite
Eight.
What's the money line on Reese's? I want to put some money
Reese's,
down.
Let's see. Reese's is going to be taking on M&M's in the next round. That's a tough matchup. They're going to have either the winner of Almond Joy or York Peppermint Patty to get to the finals. So,
and you don't get points in this. I mean, you're not giving
it's strictly voting.
All right.
Strictly voting just for fun. So we'll see how that all turns about, but I will have those links out, and please feel free to vote for those. And again, we had 80 votes in just like 3 or 4 hours. So maybe we can get bump that up to over 100 overnight. So thanks everybody for watching. And we will see you guys on Thursday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.